you're listening to another episode of Add Your Two Cents, and today I'm speaking with Paul Weick.
My fears, remembering what you said, and I tried.
After Paul and I recorded this episode, we learned that the Dirty Money Initiative was removed from the ballot by the Arizona Supreme Court.
Shows its face again, still I lie, time and time again.
How are you, Paul?
Hey, good, Chris. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. And I am looking forward to talking to an election attorney. Well, you practice election law as part of your practice, right?
Sure. It's a very seasonal thing, usually. So in season, I practice election law.
Politics is a seasonal thing. And just fair disclosure, you know that I'm running as an independent for the Arizona State Senate in District 23, right?
I did know that, yes. But we do not have an attorney-client relationship.
Correct. Thank you. I can't afford an attorney right now.
So I'm not keeping anything we say tonight confidential.
Very good. 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 And tonight we're going to talk about dark money and or dirty money, as the proposition in Arizona that's going to be on the ballot is called, outlaw dirty money, and the Citizens Clean Election Commission. So, Paul, why don't, for our listeners, if you could tell us, you know, how do you define dirty/dark money?
Well, it's a good question, and it's something that hasn't really been, it doesn't have a solid definition. I think that our proposition that may or may not be on the ballot, depending on how the Supreme Court rules on some of the issues, does give a basic definition, one that I've been using in reporting and discussions about it, where the original source of money used in an independent expenditure campaign generally is not disclosed. So what we've had is a lot of money that gets washed through different organizations, and then it eventually makes its way into a committee that spends money here in Arizona, either on behalf or opposing a candidate or on behalf or opposing a ballot measure. And sure, you say, okay, that was sponsored by Americans for Job Security, for instance. And right, that doesn't tell you anything. You can't go and look and see who funded Americans for Job Security.
Right. Yeah.
So that's it. Pretty much started after we had that well-known U.S. Supreme Court decision about 8 years ago. I think it was in 2010 itself, called Citizens United.
Right, for our listeners, Citizens United. And am I right? Let me see if I can define it correctly. It allowed corporations pretty much to infuse unlimited amounts of money into our elections. Is that how you see it?
Right. Not directly to candidates, but corporations can speak an unlimited way by independent expenditures. And that also applied to unions. And it made these independent expenditure committees top dog, basically, now for elections. Sometimes it pales, makes the amount that the candidate raises look like peanuts, basically, because candidates have, you can only contribute so much to a candidate if you're an individual or even a PAC. Corporations can't contribute directly to candidates, but they can do these independent expenditures and have unlimited amounts.
Yeah. And just for the record, I think it's important, when I hear the word corporation, I think of existing corporations. Wouldn't you say that most of the political PACs or political corporations that are infusing money into our elections have been set up? They're set up for that sole purpose. They're not like Apple or Safeway. You know, they're not the corporations you might go buy stock in, correct?
No, you're right. It's not that type of corporation, but those types of corporations may be funding these independent expenditure committees, these super PACs, as they're known. For instance, APS our Arizona Public Service major utility, obviously has not spent money just on its own. It's given money to these different organizations that get set up, and it funnels money. Some of it is some of the money that APS has spent in the last couple of cycles is disclosed. Some of it's disclosed more timely than others, and some of it is undisclosed. So we don't know how much APS has put into Arizona's elections, because some of it has gone, went through committees that did not have to disclose anything. They also gave money that did have to be disclosed, and we helped bring a lot of that to light. Some of what APS disclosed back in 2014, 2016, they gave to the Republican Attorney General's Association or the Republican Governor's Association. And they gave, you know, six-figure contributions to those. And those don't go through FEC disclosures, but they go through IRS disclosures. And we were able to find those IRS disclosures that aren't made as often as the FEC disclosures are. And we were able to bring some of that to light.
So tell us, you're referring to yourself as we. So who is the we you're referring to? Are you hired by?
Yeah. No, not hired by anybody. I'm a former reporter, and I write some articles for Arizona's Politics. I helped found that several years ago, back in 2010, coincidentally, when Citizens United came down, and when dark money started to make its way into our elections.
Let's jump to what's happening right now in Arizona. I'm pretty sure it's going to make it on the ballot, because I've been looking at the Arizona Secretary of State's website, and they've already cleared Maricopa County with a signature, valid signatures at 85% or higher. I think there's just one small county left out of the 15 Arizona counties. So the ballot proposition, outlaw dirty money, I think it was initiated by Arizona State Attorney General Grant Woods. Is that correct?
Grant Woods is involved in it. Terry Goddard and Paul Johnson also is involved.
So that looks like it's going to be on the ballot. And tell us in your layman's terms, assuming it's on the ballot and it is approved by the voters, what will that do?
Well, assuming it's on the ballot and makes it and gets approved, and both of those are assumptions at this point, because some of the dark money organizations are spending quite heavily to challenge it. If it is approved by voters, what it basically would do is require disclosure. Any group that is spending money in an election, either a candidate election or a ballot measure election, if they spend over a couple thousand dollars or $10,000, I believe one of the triggers is, then they have to disclose the original source of those monies. They can't just put Americans for Apple Pie. They have to put where Americans for Apple Pie got the money. So that's the basic that's the purpose of this of the initiative as they've set it forth. And it's not a very difficult proposition to read. It's only like 3 pages long. And it's not it's not terribly legalese. It has to be somewhat, but it's not too hard to read, and it is on their website, and it's on the state Secretary of State's website as well.
Yeah, it isn't hard to read. So, listeners, if you want to go read it, go read it. But I think that I read it a couple times, and one thought I had is, let me ask you this: in terms of what it's going to do, I mean, if somebody, let's say 10,000 is that figure, I don't remember, but that entity then would have to say they put $10,000 into the Arizona election. They infuse $10,000 one way or the other, either through political ads, you know, donating to a candidate's campaign, or, you know, spending money on, say, mailers for a number of different candidates that they want to support. They hit that threshold. They now have to say where all their they have to disclose their donations, what, for the last 12 months? Or do you have an understanding of kind of like, what is the now disclosure that, you know, I understand we want to know where this money's coming from, but is there something in there that says, okay, well, now we need to know where the money, where your funds came from over the last 12 months, or is it not that specific?
Right. No, it is that specific. It indicates that when a person or a committee spends more than $10,000 in the election cycle, that they have to make an initial disclosure at that point within 5 days of making that, of reaching that $10,000 limit, that $10,000 threshold, rather. They have to make an initial disclosure as to where the sources of money came from. And any source that's more than 2,500, the proposition indicates, has to have an original source designation. So it would have an original source means you can't have gotten it from some other group or some other committee. You have to, it has to be, it defines it. It's kind of weird at first to read it. An original source is funded directly from sources that are not contributions, donations, or gifts. So basically, it's designed to get through to whoever's earning that money, whoever earned that money that's being spent on the proposition.
And the whoever could be a corporation.
Yes, exactly.
Individual or the corporation,
right,
earn that money.
Right. Right. You don't have to list each shareholder in that corporation. You just have to, if the corporation is an actual business that derives most of its income from sales or from services, then that is considered an original source.
Well, I'm concerned about, is there a way to, you know, what if I raise money? Let's assume this it's November 15th, the election's over. I start raising money November 16th, and then I stop raising it, you know, say November 14th, a year before the election, you know, begins.
How much did you raise?
Let's say I raised $1 million or something.
Good job.
Okay, thanks. If I do that, you'll be the first
one. Okay. But it won't be for me either. So
there's no,
I like you, but it won't be for me.
It won't be.
Okay.
So there is no time. I mean, they have to just go back from the beginning kind of time, you know, when they started raising money, this entity, and say, here's where, you know, we've raised, or is there some time frame where they stop and say, okay, well, we didn't raise any money in the last 12 months.
No, it the way the proposition is worded, the way I understand it, it's whenever the money is raised. It defines the election cycle as the day after a general election, and it runs for the next 2 years until the next election.
Could you somehow skirt these rules by like raising money in one election cycle and not spending it in another, but then spending it, I mean, in another election cycle, you think?
Well, after this initiative passes, if it passes, then it would be, you would have had to disclose it in the cycle that it was raised.
But if you didn't spend it in that cycle,
you still would have. Well, let's see. It is pegged to expenditures. So yeah, when you spend that money, you would have to indicate where you got it from.
Oh, when you spend it, you'd have to indicate where
right.
you got it from, even if you raised it in a prior election.
Correct.
Yeah. And that's far-fetched, probably, the way I'm looking at it, because how are you going to raise money if you don't even know who's running, right? You just...
Well, you know, this past year, APS, I think in 2017, APS did start stocking money away in some of these organizations. They gave money to, they saw the clean energy initiative coming down the pike, and they started putting money in different organizations. They donated to Arizona Grassroots Action, a super PAC that had supported McCain. They had and presumably was going to be supporting or might be supporting McSally or Flake. But they put money towards a group that was going to oppose the clean energy initiative. So yeah, they started planning in advance, but if this was passed, then it would have to be disclosed when they start spending the money.
Okay. All right. Now I want to move to, let's assume the laws, this proposition passes and it's well written and there's really no way to skirt disclosure. My next question is, can the Citizens Clean Election Commission really, is it the right place and can it really enforce this, you know, this law, assuming it gets passed and it's got no loopholes or ways to, I mean, what do you think about that? I mean, are they the right entity and is it something they can do? How would you go about enforcing it if you were working at the Citizen CCEC,
yeah. I think the first thing we can guarantee if this passes is that it will be challenged by some of these organizations. They will find a way to fight it. And the Citizens Clean Elections Commission has been attacked by numerous organizations and the Republican legislators, all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. So they have been on the defense before, and they will be. I'm sure they'll be on the defense again if this passes. But are they the right ones to handle the enforcement of this outlaw dirty money proposition? Yeah, I think that the reason, and you know, I've never asked the folks who drafted this. I've never asked them how they decided to put it in the clean elections. But I would imagine that it's because it's the least, the most separated from political considerations of the different entities that could have done it. The Secretary of State's office, the Attorney General's office, they're all political, led by political figures. The Citizens Clean Elections Commission, they're appointed by political figures, but the way it's written, the way the law, the initiative that established the Clean Elections Commission back in, I think it was 98, makes it so that it is as divorced from politics as an elections commission can be, I guess. The governor's appointed a couple of commissioners, and the leader, the highest leader of the opposing party, in this case, the Senate, I believe it was the Senate Majority Leader, Katie Hobbs, who is running for Secretary of State, by the way. She's appointed a couple of the commissioners. And then they have a very strong executive director, currently Tom Collins, an attorney also, and they have been very active in enforcing the laws that they can, and to the point where they're trying to take over where political entities, the more political entities have not been able to take over in enforcing campaign violations. So yeah, I think they're the ones that have to do it.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Another provision though in the initiative is that it has a private attorney general a clause that allows individuals to also bring a suit in the court if they see a violation happening that they think that the Clean Elections Commission is not addressing, they can file a suit. So that's another mechanism
Yeah. And most likely they would have to hire people, right? I mean, it just seems overwhelming to me because so many, you know, if you wanted to play kind of a game, right, and try to outmaneuver them, I mean, you could set up a lot of different entities. Mm. It still kind of bothers me. I like the idea. I definitely agree that we, you know, disclosure is important and people should know where money's coming from. But I don't know if it's going to work. I mean, I want it to work, but they're going to have to hire people, I guess, right? I mean, to really enforce this, for it to make a difference, right?
Well, and that is an issue with the clean elections. That's always they're always playing defense. They have, you know, as mentioned, Tom Collins is a very strong executive director, and he has some staff. And I'm sure they have the ability to hire private attorneys, you know, from one of the law firms if necessary. I know that one of the times that they've been able to do it, I don't know if they'd need to, you know, amp up their budget, and if they wanted to, whether the state legislature and the governor would allow them to. So
right, that's right. If they need people, that's kind of where I was going.
Yeah.
It's like, well, okay, fine. You've got this proposition approved. You've got the authority to enforce it. But guess what, Tom and the rest of you? We're not going to give you any money. And boom, here we are with this great law in the books, but with really no teeth to enforce it.
Well, and one of the things, one of the funding mechanisms for the clean elections, if you may recall, that's been taken away by the legislature, is that you used to be able to make a tax credit donation to the Clean Elections Commission to help fund that. And that's been taken away. That was taken away a few years ago, probably 5-10 years ago.
Up to how much was it? Did it used to be?
Oh gosh, I don't remember. It was a couple thousand. That was one of the tax credit donations that I used to make each year.
Oh wow. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it's a bummer.
Maybe that's something I'll look at trying to put back.
Exactly. When you're in the state Senate. Absolutely.
Definitely. But so just off, we're running up on 30 minutes here. So what else do you think is important to share with listeners? Because this is a topic we hear a lot about, yet it's always, you know, I always learn something new. And I always come away with it realizing how little I know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the history of dirty money and how Arizona's really been, you know, it's kind of a cliche almost to say ground zero for the explosion of the dark money. But it really, if you look at what we've had in the last few election cycles, it really is amazing how Arizona has been one of the key testing spots and one of the key recipients of this dark money. And it really bothers me that, in fact, one of the first ones, let me give you an example. One of the first ones was in 2012 when our current governor, who's up for re-election, was working with the contact person to the Koch brothers network, Sean Noble, and with Kirk Adams, who also ran some of the dark money operations. And Ducey was the chairman of the two committees opposing initiatives. The I think it was the 1 cent sales tax and I think the other one was the open primary, which is also which was also brought by Paul Johnson and Grant Woods, I believe. So we're seeing repeat characters here, and that's probably not coincidental. But Ducey actually made quite his bone. He was the state treasurer at the time, and he made his kind of made his conservative credentials with those two opposing initiative campaigns. And that was all dark money. And that was, It was exposed in California, the sources of the dark money that the same groups were using. And it was also the same guys in the same operation that our then treasurer, now governor, was using for those two opposition campaigns. And then 2 years later, when he was running for governor, he was also the beneficiary of a lot of the same sources of money. We've never really uncovered all the sources, but so that's an interesting example of how we've been kind of in the center of attention for the dark money, the dirty money clashes, confrontations that we're seeing play out with this initiative.
Now, just for our listeners, I mean, we do have open primaries, right? I mean,
well, we have somewhat open primaries. We have independents can vote in the non-presidential primary elections. Independents can't vote in the presidential preference election that we have, but other primaries, yes, they can. I think that initiative, if I recall, was to set up the top two primary system that California is experimenting with right now.
Right. What happened with the 1 cent sales tax? Did that end up?
He was successful in defeating that, and then Governor Brewer and the legislature came up with the other solution,
which was.
I think it was extending the one. My memory isn't holding right now on that. So
All right. But so 50-50. So the open primary thing basically went through, except for the presidential election. The 1 cent sales tax didn't go through.
Well, no, the open primary did not go through. It was the top two primary. Maybe I should have said top two primary instead of open primary.
Okay, so the initiative was to have kind of like a ranked choice voting where the top two winner go on to the general. Okay, so yeah, I think that's a whole another episode about ranked choice voting. Oh, I didn't know that. So back in 2012, there were two ballot propositions, the 1 cent sales tax and a kind of a ranked choice voting proposition, and both of them were defeated.
Yeah. Thanks in part to the dark money.
For the dark money, yeah. Ranked choice voting, yeah. People, if you're listening, listeners, check it out. I like it. And it's a way to what do you like about ranked choice voting?
Well, I don't know. I mean, obviously, it's lent itself in California, it seems to me, to some gamesmanship. But I haven't seen evidence that it's really helped bring the two major parties towards the middle. But theoretically, it seems like it should be a good thing, I guess.
Okay. Well, we'll save that for another episode. Coming up on 30 minutes, and I want to thank you very much. Listeners, if you want to find out more about Paul, the work he does, and his Arizona political blog, that'll be in the About This Episode section. I'll have links there. And you have just been listening to another episode of Add Your Two Cents. I'm Christopher Leone, and I was speaking with Paul White. And thank you, Paul. Thank you very much.
Oh, Chris, it was a pleasure. I really enjoyed speaking with you.
We'll have to do it again.
Definitely. Watching over me, and I feel